This week, a new name for you. And he has something in common with Jeremy Clarkson, so I like him already. Welcome to Grassroots Plus, sponsored by Gusto Homes.
Gusto Homes have been innovating in the residential house building sector for over 25 years with a focus on building clean energy homes in sustainable communities. Our guest tonight is Joe Skelton, commentator, freelance non-league reporter, vlogger on his Match Days channel on YouTube. Evening, Joe. Is there anything I've missed out?
I think you've probably covered the entire basis for me, but yeah, apart from, you know, playing football and sort of sitting around chilling and playing on my Xbox, that's pretty much, I think that's covered all the bases.
And what has he got in common with Jeremy Clarkson?
He doesn't like Man United.
No, they both come from Doncaster.
Oh, well, I don't know.
We've got Jezza and Joe, both from Doncaster. There you go, you see. And I know for a fact that Jeremy Clarkson doesn't like Manchester United, so that's another plus. Okay, right. Lots to do, lots to talk about, lots to get through. So news, views, gossip. The train ride, that's probably just for me, but I enjoy it. Mystic Meg's come tonight, or Mystic Dave, as the case may be. But before all that, and before all Joe's questions, it's Dave with his comprehensive look at last weekend's football, starting in the UCL North.
We mentioned on our online preview it could be a big weekend for the UCL's basement clubs, and so it proved, with both Hucknall in the North Division and Renneth in Division 1 securing victories that move them both off the dreaded drop spot. Hucknall's Derby Day demolition of Eastwood was only their second victory of the season, but enough to overtake Pinchbeck on goal difference. For a club that had only managed 7 goals in 12 away games, there was no wonder that the home faithful were left shell-shocked as the ball hit the back of the net 5 times. Unsurprisingly, the match attracted the day's top crowd, with 348 packing into Coronation Park. No change at the other end of the table, with both the title contenders winning 2-0. Leaders Sherwood, thankful for their erstwhile gold scoring skills of Craig Westgar, in front of just 53 spectators attending Melton Town's temporary home. That's an astonishing decrease in numbers for one of the best supported teams in the division last season. It was the same scoreline at Ashby Avenue as Lincoln United put their Vars exploits to one side and they extracted revenge on Heenor Town. New manager Romaine Graham has quickly transformed the fortunes of Newarkshire and Sherwood United. Goals from local boys Luke White and Liam Moran against Deeping Rangers secured the Highwaymen's third successive league victory, something that hasn't happened for 12 months. Elsewhere, after 11 successive defeats against Loughborough Students, the Boston Town locals were in a good mood as their side held out for a point. Sleaford Town were many people's pre-season title favourites, but their 12th defeat of the season, 3-1 at home to Kimberley, probably makes it a rethink time in the summer. The surprise team of the season must be Skegness Town, and they may yet get some silverware after reaching the last four of the League Cup with a single goal victory over 10-man Racing Club Warwick.
I think we've got to mention Hucknall because that result has slowly but surely been building week in, week out. They've been winning 1-0 at 90 minutes. They've had equalisers at 94 minutes, gone in against them. It's been getting better for them week in, week out.
Yeah. And Niall Towle has found his shooting boots. Our experience was he scored 2 games against Newark and Sherwood United in the Cup, signed for Newark and Sherwood, and he couldn't hit a barn door at 10 yards when he was playing up front for us. He's gone back to Hucknall, and I think he scored a minimum of 1 goal in every game he's played in since.
It's probably knowing how to manage him.
Could be.
Could be.
There was a defeat for Sleaford last night as well, wasn't there?
Well, you are harsh, aren't you?
Well, rounding up, I forget what it was. Was it 2-0 now or 1-0? I can't remember.
Very harsh, but go on then. Yes, okay. He always likes to get in a dig. Joe, he always likes to have a dig against Sleaford.
To be honest with Sleaford, I've saw them last season against Boston, and it was a feisty encounter, to be fair, in the derby. And I have to say, I really enjoyed my time when I went to Sleaford. And, you know, again, United County. So I was just looking at the table, to be fair, and, you know, it's pretty... it's pretty tight. I mean, between Hutnell and Pinchbeck, who's going to go down? I mean, you'll have on points. The only saving grace with Hutnell is they've got a game in hand over Pinchbeck. So it's one of those at the minute. I think, all right, there's a big gap between sort of the bottom two and AFC Mansfield. But at the moment, it's just going to be one of those two that's going to go down. I think Mansfield are not going to get dragged into it. But I think you look at the title race at the moment, it's probably a two-horse race. I mean, it's 7 points, but you think. And Lincoln United is before we came on air with we talked about Lincoln United. They've got the Vars coming up, which is going to be massive for them. I like to hope, fingers crossed that they can go all the way. Maybe you never know. They're a very good football side, but are they going to win the league? I think that's going to be the big question.
Yeah, if you'd asked me that a month ago, I think my answer would have been yes, they was going to win the league, but. The wheels come off for Lincoln a little bit at Heanor a few, two or three Tuesday nights ago. They was away at Heanor before they should have played at Hallam in the Vars, and I'm not sure what sort of team they put out, but Heanor put 5 goals past them, so probably speaks for itself. And then the Vars game got called off at the weekend. That result may well cost them. And if Lincoln have played a weekend side. Once before a Vars match, are they going to do it again? I mean, I think Lincoln are more than capable of getting off through the playoff system. I think they're much better than the other three teams are going to be up against. It's certainly Lincoln. I mean, Lincoln and Shearer would have been the best two teams in that division all season, without a shadow of doubt. And if you look at the bottom of the table, I think Hucknall's a team with a little bit of momentum going for them. Pinchbeck look to me like a team that's. Probably resigned to their fate, but I could be wrong. I have been known to be one once. Right, into where are we going now, David? Step six.
Yeah, and you're not wrong on this occasion, so it's only the once you've been known to be wrong, then that's good. Starting with the UCL Division One, and Renneth's hero was hat-trick man Callum Brooks, as his side lifted themselves 2 places up the table. And all this despite having had Oliver Brown sent off after 50 minutes. Bourne Town's victory over Birstall not only kept the Leicestershire side out of the playoff permissions, it opened the gap at the top to 11 points. Its status quo in the playoff race, third place Newark Town, took the lead against sixth place Harrowby United, had experienced defender Joe Braithwaite sent off, and conceded an equaliser in the last 10 minutes. Second place, fifth at the Lido Ground, no goals and one red card was the sum total of the afternoon's entertainment. And with Kirby Muxlow's match at Selston falling foul to the predictably sodden Selston pitch, it remains congested for the 3 remaining playoff places. Southwell City managed a clean sheet as a single Christopher Okoye goal at Lutterworth lifted the Minstermen well away from any relegation worries. Midweek victories for Harrowby and Dunkirk closes the gap to 6 points between 3rd and 7th. Who can hold their nerve in that division? Finally, on Crowdwatch, 366 at Bourne, 228 at Newark Town, and only 87 at Clipston. So far, our review has been rain-free, but that's all about to change as we look at the Northern Counties East League with Ollerton Town, the only one of our sides to survive a pitch inspection, and they'll wish that they hadn't after suffering a 9-0 defeat at Beverley Town. More midweek action saw Retford United come back down to earth with a bump after losing 3-2 at 18th place Athersley Recreation. No such problems for Beverley Town, who returned to the top after a 4-2 victory at Glasshoughton.
So you've seen all the games. You've seen lots of games, Joe. Who's going to go? Who's going to join? Well, Bourne's going to win Division One by a country mile.
Yeah.
Clipston, I think, 10 points in front of the chasing pack. I can't see them slipping up enough. So that are these 3 playoff places between definitely 5 and maybe 6 teams. I think it's going to be a fun end to the season because with 10, 11 games to go, it's now getting very tight. And, like Newark Town had a player sent off at the weekend, you now miss 3 matches. So you're almost missing a third of the running. So you're going to have to be very careful now.
Yeah, and I think looking at the results, and like I say, you're absolutely right, Bourne Town are going to win the league. I mean, like I say, they're miles in front of Clipston and 13 points. And I think, I've not seen too much of them this season, and like I say, they've been on my list to do for a while. I mean, the last time I saw them was at Hucknall last season, and they looked a very, very good side then. I think they were just in the round of playoffs at that point. But you look at that point, Clipston are nailed on for second place, and they're going to be in the playoffs. But anywhere from pretty much third down towards eighth, the gap's 9 points. I mean, as you said, you're absolutely right. I think there's going to be some major battles, and teams are going to take points off each other towards the back end of the season. I'd probably say your Radfords and your Saffron Dynamos, I think, are probably a little bit too out of it now. But I think I always like this sort of this time of the season where there's maybe 10 games left in the season, 10, 12 games left, and teams are now fighting to get into the playoffs. And then you always get that team that puts a little run together and gets that momentum and go into the playoffs, and before you know it, they become one of the favourites. So I always like sort of step six a little bit, and like I say, with Northern Counties, which has been sort of my bread and butter for the last few years since I've covered the channel, there's going to be some exciting matches towards the end of the season. I mean, you look at Retford United, and you mentioned there last night, on Tuesday night, I should say, they're losing to Athersley, which was a real shock result. So I still think Retford will make the playoffs. I said it before Ball were kicked this season that Retford would be in the playoffs. I said, I put my neck on the line. I said Retford would win the playoffs. So, and I still stand by my comment. But at the moment, I think at the weekend, they go to Parkgate, who are second place in the league. So
That's a big match. Something's got to give. Something has got to give, as it did on that one.
it's massive. I went to Parkgate on Tuesday when they played Worksop in the Sheffieldshire Cup, and all right, Parkgate were missing some players, but they still gave a good account of themselves. And Worksop could have come, they could have come a cropper on Tuesday night if they weren't careful. But they showed the class when they needed to. But Parkgate are dangerous. I've had a debate with a couple of people on Twitter saying, Parkgate will win the league even though they've got five, six games in hand. But surely as a fan, surely as a player and a manager, you'd rather have the points on the board than the games in hand. So I think at this time of the season, like us, us non-league fans, we're this period of the season, it's just really exciting that we've got, these games left, and anything can happen. Whoever's going to go up, who's going to go down, it's going to be an exciting end to the season.
I think both David and I have a soft spot actually for Beverley Town.
Yeah, I think with Beverley, again, I've only seen them once this season, and they played Horbury, and I came away from the game thinking, because at the time I think they were third or fourth in the league, and I came away from it thinking, is this team really good enough to go up, or really good to be in the playoffs? And albeit they've proved me wrong with some of the results they've got, Horbury are a good side on the day. So I think, that kind of step six with United Counties and Northern, I think there's a lot of teams that are very, very similar, and no wonder you. Because you won't get, like a couple of years ago when I first started covering sort of Northern Counties, you had the likes of North Ferriby and Hallam, who were just it was just on a different level to the rest of the league. I don't think you get that many teams now that you get one or two the quality of those in the league. I think there's a lot of teams now that are very, very similar, albeit. I'm probably going to contradict myself and say, you look at Bournemouth, 13 points clear. So it's yeah, I think you're certainly right. Beverley, a good side. I probably will see him towards the end of the season. But as I say, I think my argument is there's so many clubs and so little time.
Question to both of you then. Let's go back to step five for a moment. Are Sherwood and Lincoln United ready for step four? And yes, I know Lincoln was a step 14 12 months ago, but obviously it wasn't good enough. Because both David and Joe on this one, and I know I'm going off script a little bit, there seems to me it is a massive, massive jump from step five to step four. It's not so much of one from step six to step five, but then you want to go that extra step to step four, and the whole aspect of football seems to be run differently.
Yeah, I got the impression that if you go from sort of six to five, everybody's about an inch taller on the pitch and about an inch faster to every ball. You go to step four and everybody's about a foot taller and a foot faster to every ball. I feel it. And not only that, the way the club has to be run, there are a lot more constraints. It's where sort of organised football becomes big boys football almost at that point. And yeah, Lincoln United have been there. They've got the infrastructure. I hope their crowds will pick up again. They're not brilliant considering where they are in the league. And likewise at Sherwood Colliery. I know there's a lot of other clubs nearby, but we know they've got a generous benefactor there who is controlling the money they've got. But even so, I would think they will want crowds of over 100 if they're going to step four. What's your thoughts on that, Joe?
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think, you know, Sherwood Colliery not so long ago were in the Northern Counties, and they were around that time where you had the, you know, I think a couple of years ago, I think they finished third and just missed out on around the time before they changed the playoff system. They, when you had the sort of the relegation playoff, they just missed out by a couple of points, and they were a good sign. And I agree with you that that area is very saturated with football clubs, and it's sometimes harder, certainly if Mansfield are at home, then it's always going to be difficult to pull fans in. The same with Lincoln United. If Lincoln City are at home, I think it's difficult to try and pull fans in. But I think Lincoln, like you say, you know, they've been a step four side, you know, in the past. They know what it takes. You're right. I think there is a massive jump from five to four. So I think at the minute, I think there's only kind of very few kind of exceptions. You know, North Ferriby have done it. They've held themselves well in the East Division. So it's difficult. I think, you know, I've seen sort of the East and the Midland side with step four, and I think the Northern Premier East is generally a league where you kind of bully teams a little bit. There's not as technical players than say the Midlands League, but there's generally good games. And I think the exciting thing is certainly for any of the two clubs that go up from step five. So if Sherwood were to go up, I think they would hold their own. I think that when you've got someone like Craig Westcar who's been scoring goals and he's had a great season, I think he would do quite well at step four. I think Lincoln United, there's been a couple of times I've seen them where, look, the squad's good. I think they probably need to strengthen. Like both clubs, I think they need to strengthen. I think, as you mentioned there, the likes of Loughborough, Skegness, Melton, I think they would really struggle at the next level.
I totally agree. Too much agreement going off here. Right, let's have a look at the feeder leagues.
The game of the day had to be the Lincolnshire Junior Cup semi-final at the Vertigo between Skegness Town Reserves and Crowell Colts. Finding themselves 3-1 and a man down after 45 minutes, Crowell took the game into extra time with a Kurt Robinson goal 3 minutes from time. Inside three mad extra time minutes, the team shared a goal each and the visitors were reduced to 9 men. Amazingly, the 9 men took the lead for the first time, only for the one final twist to take place that took the match into the dreaded shootout. The Colts hurled their nerve and can now look forward to a first ever county final. In the best of the rest, Collingham reached the semi-final of the Nottinghamshire Senior League Cup with a comprehensive 7-1 victory at Gresley Reserves. Top scorer Garvey Cameron hitting four, and Nettleham opened a 10-point lead at the top of the Lincolnshire Football League with a 5-1 victory at bottom club Grimsby Borough Reserves.
And the Cornish Corner.
It rained no football for a month for the mighty Lizard Argyle, but every other club in that division's absolutely delighted.
Getting depressing. It's getting very depressing, but with a little bit of luck, all the rain will have gone before I get there. Okay, this is Grassroots Plus with Dave Pickerel, Mick Bradley, and our very special guest, the man from Doncaster, Joe Skelton. Okay. Here's where I shut up now. Not yet.
It was just the opportunity when you said this is where I shut up. I thought, oh, great.
But I haven't shut up yet.
Oh, okay.
Right. Freelance non-league reporter.
Joe, how does that work? Who and how do you supply your reports to? It's always fascinated me.
Yeah, so a lot of the time with my YouTube stuff, that's been a lot of the time. So I during my sort of my master's days, I actually looked at sort of doing a couple of reports for a couple of the clubs. So when I was down at sort of in the West Midlands, in when I was doing my university, I looked at clubs like Alva Church, I looked at Shiffnell Town. There was when I was up in the Northwest, I did some a couple of bits of Runcorn Town. So just gaining that little bit of extra experience, and I think sort of the press and the social media side of it is, I think it's important now for football clubs. I think there's a growing kind of stature of sort of an audience there that people would rather look at sort of Twitter updates rather than look at a match report. There's still that kind of area, there's still that audience that people would like to read match reports. But I think with certainly the day, certainly now in this day and age with social media, I think it's nice that you can sort of do it electronically a little bit. You can just tag something into Twitter, tag something into Instagram. So how I got into it was really that sort of through my university, and I sort of wanted to gain some experience and kind of not kind of be so one dimensional with how I do football. So, at least I've got those skills that I can rely on. And I used to write a lot for the women's game as well when I was at Donegal. So it's something that I've really enjoy, something that I probably don't do often as much as I used to, but it's something that it's a nice skill to have in the bank, that's for certain.
It is. I mean, I've seen most of your stuff vlogging and things like that, which always make me laugh because you look at the game constructively. You're probably impartial most of the time, but you can always tell that you've got a bit of a bit of a feeling for another club. How difficult is it when you're doing a report, say for somebody more major, not to be sort of tinted glasses or in the report for the home club or the club that you're representing? How difficult do you find that?
I think it sometimes when you get caught up in the moment, I think that's always been the key thing, and that's always been the issue with me. I think probably the best example I could give was probably last season in the playoff final when Hales Owen played Spalding. Cracking game, really, really great game. There was about there were just over 3,000 were there for the playoff final, and Spalding, to be fair to them, were really, really unlucky. They were a good side, albeit this season they've gone at it again. It's difficult when you lose your best player to Macclesfield for big money. But it's difficult when you're in that kind of environment where loads of things are at stake. As you say, you get caught up in the moment. And I think there are games that are a lot easier to kind of be sort of impartial than others. I think sometimes it goes on decisions as well. I think there was a great example was probably my impartiality that I was quite biased was early in the season when Retford United played Wordsby Bridge, and Wordsby had an absolute stonewall penalty. It should have been a penalty. And I'm stood there and I had a fantastic view of it. And I'm going, that is a stonewall penalty. And I was really, really biased then towards Wordsby a little bit, albeit I love Retford United, I really do. But it's sometimes it's not easy. It's not easy. But I think as I've been doing it for so long, you just kind of you sort of learn a little bit to kind of pick your moments when you can be sort of straight down the middle. Or I think it's not always easy when you go somewhere like with Donny Rovers where it's your club that you support. It's my hometown club, and you have to be impartial. That's always a difficult thing. But no, I love it. I love doing it. It's I think, as I say, as you do it for so long, it's you start to just learn to pick your moments when you do.
Okay, for me and countless other thousands that listen to this show, what's vlogging?
So, vlogging is basically going on. YouTube is one of the biggest platforms, probably is in the world, really, with sort of getting your content out. There's a lot of digital content, so what you do with podcasts and how you present it. So you'll put it onto a platform. That's digital content. That's one side of it. YouTube is another side of it where a lot of the clubs are like those YouTube vloggers like myself will go to a game, we'll put it out and we'll tag clubs in it. It's like a highlights really that sort of gives something back to the club. And a lot of the clubs do appreciate it because there's there's a life outside the Premier League, there's life outside the Football League. And you get clubs that are, I saw a tweet the other day and I couldn't help but retweeting it by saying these clubs at step five and six, they are really the heartbeat of what English football really is. And I couldn't agree more with it. But, you know, going doing YouTube for 5.5 years now, it's one of the things that got me into it. There was a couple of people that got me into it. And, you know, you start to just take you take off. You always get that worry that are people going to watch my vlogs, and are they going? And you get that self consciousness a little bit. But vlogging is for me the way forward with football in the future, and it'll continue to be the amount of football YouTubers there are on the scene in this day and age is absolutely ridiculous, and everyone's fighting to get their own bit of content out there, and sometimes you've got to stand out in front of the crowd. And I found that as long as I continue to do my stuff and people watch it, that's great. And as long as the clubs, as long as the fans enjoy it, that's great. I'm not one of those that one of the YouTubers that I see that sort of, and it's probably a little bit harsh, but becomes a little bit of a sellout with stuff and kind of alienates themselves away from the fans. I think you've got to stay true to, I always think, stay true to what you know and what I've been doing and what brought me to the dance for so long. But as I say, you know, vlogging is certainly a way forward and it is a future for football clubs. I think, as I say, going back to sort of match reporting, that was kind of, people would read that and people would get an understanding, like you see in a paper where they'll read what the score was, who scored, what was the incidents. I think nowadays, when people have got all this technology, they can actually look at and actually see games live and actually see the highlights. And it's nice when you get players that will message you or they'll tweet you saying, thanks for getting the goal. Like the other day, I was at Belper Town and they played Stocksbridge, and Dan Moore, the goalkeeper for Belper, made an absolute stunning save to keep it nil-nil. And I put it out. He retweeted it, he said thank you very much. And it's kind of, you get that nice interaction with players and coaches and staff. So like I say, I think vlogging is certainly the way forward for the modern game.
Just learned how to write. Right, it's been a tad wait, and a winless win, and money talks. In other words, David.
If you think it's been bad up here, you can think again. Every South West Peninsula League match was postponed last weekend, and that means across their two divisions of 16 teams, just 21 matches took place in the whole of February. That means the remaining 2 months of the season, there are 177 league matches still to be played. That's going to be fun fitting all those in, isn't it?
It is. Well, I don't suppose we'll get Mr. Hiscock on before the end of the season. They'll be too busy.
He'll be visiting all the 177 league games that still need to be played.
Yes.
South Midlands side, Sawbridge with Town, beat Potton United on Tuesday evening to record their first victory of the season at the 26th attempt. That now leaves Tolaw Town with the unwanted title of the last Step 5 side to remain winless. Farnham Town made it 24 from 24 with a last-minute penalty against Jersey Bulls. The crowd of over 800 saw this one. That's not bad for a Tuesday night.
It's not on whoever's bankroll in Farnham Town. They're obviously getting their rewards for it. Radio commentary and YouTube. We've talked about YouTube, which apparently is vlogging and whatever all that's still supposed to mean, because I still don't understand it. So let's stick to radio commentary, David.
Yeah, again, you've kind of explained how you've started the vlogging stuff. How do you get into commentary? The people you broadcast for, your broadcast media partners, and what sort of area are you covering? I mean, I know from your YouTube stuff, as you've said, kind of Northern Counties East League and a bit further where it takes your fancy.
Yeah, so how I got into it, again, going back to my master's degree, really. So there was a point where one of my course leaders was going through kind of the work experience model and the module that we were doing, and Switch Radio, which is a station in Birmingham. They are a community-based station. They were looking for people that were wanting to do cover non-league football, women's football, doing podcasts. Around the time, of course, was during sort of the 2020-21 season, where we were able to kind of sort of go to step three and six, but having the maximum 600 fans, which looking back now, sort of 4 years on, four years on, is still mad, really, the fact that we actually lived through those times and actually went into those games. But when I saw the opportunity, I sort of took it with both hands. I went to my course leader and said, I want to do this. And at the time, so it would have been December 2020. So, yeah, so around just before I was going back to sort of back home, really, I sort of put myself forward and spoke to Kevin Moore, who's sort of the head of sport at Switch Radio, at Switch Sports. So, and the conversation just went from there. We just, around the time of the new year, we started doing loads of podcast episodes with different chairmen of football clubs around the West Midlands. So the first one we did was with Dudley Town. There was we ventured forward to Brockton and Stafford Town. And then until we started, we were able to kind of cover games. Sort of, it was really more sort of friendlies than at that point. But around the time we were able to get out and able to do stuff, which was actually really good. And then when I finished my degree, which would have, well, I finished my degree sort of August, September 21. I was looking for a club and to do my media, and I sort of contacted Donny Rovers. They first wanted me looking at the academy side, but I still had sort of contacts with Switch. And then luckily they came back to me and said, look, we want you to cover the women's team. So I said, okay. And fortunately they were in the Midlands League, in the National League Division One Midlands, and Switch Radio actually covered that league. So I went to Kevin Moore with the idea. I said, I want to bring Donny Bells with me to Switch, which all the conversations I've had with him, which is still really funny, the fact that it took, and this is what still annoys me to this day, is the fact that it took a Birmingham radio station to cover Donny Bell's games, which is still fascinating to me. But the fact that I was able to sort of get experience doing sort of women's commentary on a Sunday, and I still do now with Sheffield FC Women, and we'll get onto that a little bit later on. But the fact that I was able to do that, I was able to kind of branch out, and eventually I ended up doing commentary with Stanford, Russia Olympic, doing a few commentaries with Bolton St Michael's coming up. So there's kind of really exciting, a lot of exciting kind of projects in the pipeline sort of in the next couple of months. So very excited to see where this commentary goes. And like I say, you know, this is something that I want to pursue going forward, not just as sort of something that is a volunteer kind of thing, but really kind of like a main job, really. So like, want to be the next sort of Peter Drury, the Martin Tyler of the world, probably Martin Tyler 20 odd years ago, not the Martin Tyler the last few years, but you know, for me, there's that kind of area. But I think, as I say, going back to kind of that YouTube area, you've got to have that kind of unique selling point for yourself and show that commitment and that dedication. And I think a lot of people that probably see me probably would say that I've got that in abundance. And sometimes you just need that bit of luck. But I love doing radio commentary. I've done it for, oh God, it'll be coming up to 3 years now. But I'm still learning. I'm still understanding that I listen back to my commentaries from a year, maybe 6 months ago, and I'll sort of pick out the key areas and go, okay, I'll say this, I won't say that, I need to be more enthusiastic in this area, I need to sort of do better stats, I need to do this, do that. So I'm very critical of myself when it comes to doing commentary, and it's, I don't want to be kind of, I've done a commentary, that's great, and then move forward. I want to be looking back and going, right, how can I make myself better that going forward, I'm going to sound more professional, I'm going to sound better, and people are going to sort of take notice of me a little bit. But for me, I love doing commentary. It's like I say, it's one of the best things I do on a Sunday. Well, it gets me out of the house. That's the main thing.
Well, there's a reason, I suppose. Right. You're listening to Grassroots Plus One, proudly sponsored by Gusto Homes.
This week, it's the Northwest Counties League Groundhop. 7 matches, 2 counties in 3 days. It all starts tonight at St Helens, moves on to Longridge, Garston and Squires Gate on a Super Saturday, and it finishes at Uxton Villa and Charnock Richard on Sunday. Just hope the weather behaves for them all.
And I take it you've been to all those grounds, Mr. Pickerel.
No, not the one beginning with U. That's why. Sorry, the EU. Is it Exton, Uxton Villa? I don't know. I couldn't pronounce that one.
I do know it's on the West Coast Main Line, but I don't know anything more than that.
Yeah, I've been to Charnock Richard, obviously Longridge, Garstang, yes, yeah, and Squires Gate. Squires Gate is interesting because about three grounds almost next door to each other along that little bit in Blackpool. So, that sounds like an exciting ground top. Is it St Helens that play at the Rugby League ground? Or is that perhaps Warrington up that way? I know there's one of the clubs that's got a huge ground they play at.
Widnes. They play
Widnes,
at.
All right.
Because I know St Helens have got their own little ground. Which would be nice to go. I'll need to take that off at some point. I think they're at home in the next couple of weeks. I think they've got Route 1 Rovers coming up, which would be great. But yeah, Widnes, I think they're one of the very few clubs, apart from Wakefield, who play at the Rugby League ground.
Yeah, it's a big ground, isn't it? It looks nice, but you've got to have a decent crowd in a big ground. Otherwise, it does look like loose change rattling around a bucket, really, doesn't it?
I was going to the northeast and the southwest.
I was going to say though, like the problem is that areas. I would say, you know, rugby league dominates that area, and unfortunately, unless you're a big club, and again, it doesn't help when you've got Liverpool, Man City, Man United in that area. It doesn't help either.
That's two big clubs and one that think they still are a big club. That's what you mean, isn't it?
What, Man United, small club, yeah. True.
I still think they're a big one, but they're not.
They're a small team near Stockport, aren't they? Is that the chant you come out with these days?
Move on before we get into trouble. Right, we're moving on with a big question, because last week we asked which famous players you've seen playing non-league football. And that, I think, managed to keep Mr. Pickerel busy for most of the weekend and into Monday as well, as the answers literally flooded in, David.
Yeah, well, apologies if I didn't respond to everybody, but they were popping up all over the place. We'll start off with Gav Rice, who, after initially offering me cut-price Italian lessons this week, went on to say, I refereed Alan Kennedy, amongst others, at a police charity tournament in Liverpool in the mid-2000s. I also remember Mike Marsh running after me and telling me that I had Zed Cars as my ringtone after giving a penalty against him to Everton on the same day.
That is brilliant. And before you go any further, talking about our language, head of languages at one of the local schools, what was your reply to him?
I said, could I do your nicking hubcaps course first and I can raise some money to pay for the Italian?
Shocking. Absolutely.
Because
shocking.
I did make a comment when Lincoln United were going up there to play South Liverpool. I said, perhaps I ought to speak to Gavin. He'll tell you how to keep him in place. And he says, just super glue on.
Carry on.
11 Merry Men. I saw Mickey Drury playing for Kingstonian in 88-89. That springs to mind. I'm sure there'll be a more recent player, but I need to check through my programmes. Steve Mack, off the top of my head, Kevin Hector playing for Boston United when they were in Northern Premier League at Tranmere in the FA Cup around 1978. He was on loan from Vancouver Whitecaps. He later returned to Derby, of course. Rob Hornby, where do I begin? Bryn Gunn, European Cup winner with Forest at Arnold Town. Marlon Harewood played for Greyfriars in the Notts Senior League. And Lee Hendry at Basford United. Gary Johnson, John Robertson graced the Newark Alliance for the Greyhounders. Julian Joachim played for Town in the Central Midlands Football League. And Clinton Morrison turned out at the YMCA for Michelover Sports in a friendly against Town a few seasons ago. Neil Tatter remembers seeing Ali Morkland playing for Hinckley Town around 1996. Ian Bailey saw Jerry Armstrong playing for Southwick. Inter LTFC, Alex Stepney played for Altrincham. He made 33 appearances and helped them win the inaugural National League, which was then known as the Alliance Premier League in 1980. A Twitter account whose handle is Name Can't Be Blank also commented, I saw Alex Stepney play for Altrincham a few times. He was a class keeper. Paul Wilkinson said, not as impressive, but I saw Alan Dickon, Tommy Langley playing for Chesham United. Steve Crane, when I was manager of Claypole, we drew Greyhounders in the Willie Hall Cup. We lost 3-2 after extra time. John Robertson was the landlord of the pub and also played for Greyhounders. He came into our dressing room before the game saying, I'm going to bite the legs off your men. And then Rob Cornby actually, interestingly said, does Paul Franks count? He was a Notts cricket wicketkeeper, and during the footy season, he played in goal for Magdala in the NSL. Ian then popped up and said, yeah, actually, I saw Sumit Patel play for Magdala. Derek Randall remembers Nigel Clough at Burton, Emma Louise Clark, Julian Joachim playing for Aslockton and Austin a few years back. Michael mentioned Lee Hendry again at Basford. He apparently came out in one game, the immortal quote, do you know who am I? To which the opposition replied, no, do you? Jeff Baldock saw Neil Webb playing in a five-a-side in the local summer tournament. Promotional rescue, he remembers a game with Tilbury 0, Romford 4. Visitor's side started with Alan McKnight, Martin Hayes and Colin Pates. I saw John Charles playing for both Hereford and Merthyr, he went on to add. Ian Storymore with Burton, Ted Ditchburn, Malcolm Allison and Lee Dukem playing for Romford. And the list goes on. Trevor Brooking turned out at Havering Nowgo in the Brentwood Sunday League. Jimmy Greaves at Brentwood. There's loads and loads. So thank you to everybody that responded. And I had a really good afternoon. Well, a couple of afternoons going through those. And there were some real names from the blast from the past in there.
No, I mean, we've said it before. We do thank you for getting involved. And it's absolutely a brilliant response. I'm going to make you work a little harder next week and just to see what sort of response we get to Davey's question over this coming weekend. Because all we want is to see your favourite footballing photo.
Can we just qualify? Is it one they've taken themselves or a photograph they've seen somebody else take?
I'll leave that to you when you put it out.
Okay, I think probably favourite football photo you've taken yourself is probably, unless, I guess, if you found yourself in a picture with somebody famous, I guess.
Yeah, I'll leave that to you. And let's just see what reaction we get to that. Just to try something new. We'll try and brighten Twitter up with some photos, shall we? Or X or Z or...
And then the week after, it'll be lifeboat launches and trains, will it?
Yes.
To keep you happy.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll win that one. Right, our guest tonight, as we've already alluded to, is a big supporter of the women's game. So let's talk women's football now for a while.
Joe, you obviously at the moment you're reporting and covering Sheffield Women. You mentioned Donny Bells a little bit earlier. If you go back 20 years, if you've mentioned women's football, that's about the only club most people had heard of at the time, the Doncaster Bells. Now, because of the way, I guess, franchising works and the way the FA and people have treated some of the former ladies' clubs, they're not the big name they used to be.
No, they're not. And I think the sad thing about it is, you know, when I sort of joined the club in 2021, it was, they'd only just survived Tier 4. And, you know, credit to Andy Butler, credit to Nick Buxton, they revitalised the club, really. I mean, they brought kind of the feel-good factor back to it, albeit I think the Club Doncaster side of it, and I've never been a big fan of the Club Doncaster kind of model of how Doncaster Rovers really is, but the way that I see it, you know, it seems to be that they kind of just get pushed to the side a little bit, which I was never a big fan of. It was kind of Rovers, the Dons, the rugby league team, and then the Bells would just come in a bit later on because that's what they were. And like you say, you know, going back 20 years, Donny Bells had a big rivalry with Arsenal around sort of the early noughties kind of area. And, you know, there was a couple of people that, you know, one of my people I used to live on my street called Jess Sigworth, who's now playing at Sheffield United, who used to play for Manchester United, play for Leicester City, started her career at Donny Bells. And, you know, she's an unbelievable talent, really, really is. Used to play in the park with her and all that. And when played all football, it used to be great. And you say the Bells over the last couple of years, you know, I was very, very fortunate to kind of see their kind of rise back up, where a couple of second place finishes, a County Cup final, and, you know, getting into the first, second round of the FA Cup. And, you know, there were some good times, really, really good times when I was there for a few years. And I knew when people were moving on that it was time for me to move on, that I built some good relationships over that time. And when you see people walk away because of management and really that kind of sort of forefront of what's happened at Club Doncaster, I didn't really accept that. So I'm very much looked in and went, maybe it's time for me to move on as well. And, you know, I'm very, very glad I did, really, because I went to Sheffield FC.
Okay, right, now is time where I get myself into trouble, I've no doubt. The standard of the women's game. Would I be right in saying that at the very top, the standard is high, but as you it drops off fairly alarmingly as you go down the ladder. Would that be a harsh statement, or would you agree?
I think there's a perception where people will look at that. I think the more and more you see it, I think the rule kind of, when you look at tier three, the likes of what Newcastle United have done, the amount of money that they've thrown at it is absolutely crazy. The fact that they're the only full-time club at tier three, which is ridiculous, really, the fact that they've done it. But there's a good standard, and there's a very, very good standard in WSL. There is a good side, there's a good standard in the Championship. There's some good teams in that, in that area, the likes of Watford that I saw last season, the likes of Southampton that have come up. I do think there is a massive, massive drop between clubs that have gone up from tier four to go into tier three. There is a massive, massive jump, and you get clubs that are not so much. You get clubs that are really part time. It's like anything when you see, a kind of, and this is probably not a comparison, but you look at something like non-league where there's clubs that are part time, and then you get clubs that are full time, and there's a massive difference. There's a massive difference when you go from tier four to tier three in the women's game, and I've seen it. A couple of years ago, Bournemouth St Michael's won the Division One Midlands, and with a good team, they had a very, very good team. They went up, kind of kept the same team, didn't really add to it, and they came straight back down in the first season. So, unless you have money behind you, and you have the capability of pulling players in, it's difficult. Stourbridge have been the kind of exception. They've brought in some good players, and they're going to stay up in the Northern Prem, but again, it's becoming very similar to the men's game where the money's starting to trickle down and you're starting to see the gap getting wider and wider. And I do fear for a lot of clubs where it's just going to get to a point where you're just going to get a continuous cycle of teams going down and coming straight back up. And I think at this point, as you say, the standard of the game, I think it's the standard of the game in tier three and tier four is absolutely really, really good. There is some quality games you get. But as you say, with teams that are getting money, it's just starting to widen the gap a little bit. And like I say, we've seen that in the men's game and the women's game, it's started to really, really trickle in. And I think for clubs like Donegal's, I'd like to hope, with Sheffield, that certainly next season we can claw ourselves out and get back into what Sheffield, because again, 10 years ago, Sheffield FC women were in the top tier alongside Donegal's. And
Joe, isn't I'm going back to the Newcastle thing, as David confidently expected I would do. I'm afraid women's football is the same as men's football. If you want success, it boils down to one thing, and that is money. Newcastle want that women's team playing at the top level, and the only way that they can do that is doing what they are doing. It's no different to what Farnham Town are doing at step five. It's not a lot of difference to what teams like Retford United and Shirebrook do. They literally throw money to try and get promotion. And that is a sad indictment of football. It's not about homegrown talent. It's not about managing the level that you've got. It's about having the ability to spend to bring in better talent so you can get that promotion. That is, I'm afraid that is football, isn't it?
yeah, I agree with you. I think that unfortunately, as you say, to get success, you have to buy it now. You're long gone are the days where you can, like what Donegal's used to be, where they don't pay the players and you're having to kind of have a shoestring budget and you can actually do well. Those days are long gone. Those days where, as you say, with Newcastle, what they've done, the only full-time club in tier three where you've got a manager that's on a pretty decent wage. And you've got a budget that's absolutely astounding. I think their budget's something like half a million quid. So, as you say, you expect them to be top of the, you expect them to go up into the championship. We're two going up this season. It's changed the game. But unfortunately, as you say, and this is what annoys me, and this is, like say, 10 years ago, Donny Bells were at the top of the WSL. And the only reason why they got relegated is because Manchester City came in. And City, with all their money, as you've said, City, they've gone on. But you're right. I think there is a correlation with teams, like say at Step Six, where, like you said, the likes of Retford United and Shirebrook and that, they've got the money and they're bringing in players. Like you say, I don't disagree with the fact that you have teams that are coming up from Tier 5 in the women's game. They've got money. And as you say, does it make the game better? Yes and no. Yes and no.
We'll have to have another show for that one.
I think yes and no. Oh, sorry.
I think there's just, I think you want to see the quality players at that level, but at the same time you get that kind of criticism where you go, oh, they've bought the league. They've not actually had to work hard to actually win the league.
As I do, listening to the interviews and the reports of the Newcastle women, there's an awful lot of Geordie accents.
And yeah, exactly. I think again, that area of the northeast, and I go back and I can go from experience from what I've covered in the Midlands League. The Midlands League, the amount of teams that are in the West Midlands that are in that Midlands League is absolutely frightening. The amount of teams are like, you know, Stourbridge, Sporting Kelsey, Solihull Moors, West Brom, Wolves. That area is frightening. The amount of players that, you know, if you've got a good team in Tier 4 and you have a good relationship with Wolves, West Brom, Birmingham, Villa, and you're able to bring the young players on loan down to the club to get experience, then it's a valuable asset to have. Unfortunately, in this area, in this part of the world, there is no kind of feeder, unless you're Sheffield United. And Sheffield United are probably the biggest club, the biggest women's club at this part of the world. There isn't really that kind of team where you can maybe cherry pick one of the two young players and you can bring them in and get experience. Newcastle, in that area, in the northeast, it's a big catchment area. And they're able to say, there are a lot of Geordie accents and they can pull in the talent when they need to.
They've reached the, what is, I suppose, a League Cup final. I'm sure Joe will correct me, but it's the Cup final for everything below level one and one and two. They're playing some ridiculously named team in the final. The semi-final was played at St. James's Park in front of just under 30,000 people. So where did the FA choose the final to be?
Kenilworth Road.
Yes. Luton Town's ground, the biggest in the area, and they have to play it there. Of all the grounds they could have gone to, the pick one that holds about 900 supporters, and you have to go in through somebody's back garden to get into the game. That should be a showpiece. That's the FA really promoting the women's game, isn't it?
Well, this is what goes back to what I was saying. And you say, you're right, that last season, the League Cup final was at the Pirelli Stadium. And you had the plate final was at Solihull Moors' ground. And I mean, you got a great game to Stourbridge and Leeds United, but you're right. You know, this season the Continental League Cup finals at Wolves, which I think is a, all right, that's a good ground.
Yeah,
to
I'll go with that
at,
one. Yeah,
which is good.
Yeah.
The fact that you got the League Cup final, I think the way that they've done it, and again, I don't agree with a lot of the FA stuff. I think they are a bit of a joke in terms of how they handle stuff, and that's probably an understatement of the century. But there's, for me, you're absolutely right. I don't know whether they've gone on the geographic of where the two clubs are, because if it is, then we'd end up having the League Cup final in Yorkshire, which would be nice. But it's, unfortunately, I think they say, I think whatever's going to pull in the most money, the FA are going to do that, which is a sad thing to think about.
Just very quickly, because I've got to keep my eye on time.
Yeah.
Ladies football at Parks football level. So not Sheffield or Donnybells or anything like that. Let me take it right down to the grassroots Sunday afternoon Parks level. Is that thriving, or at that level have they got problems?
again, I think there needs to be, I personally think there needs to be more money that goes into it. I think, you know, if you go all the way down to, as you say, you go down to the grassroots level, I think the coaching is there. Unfortunately for me, that I don't think there's a lot of new and up and coming coaches coming through. And I think, as you say, it just goes down to resources, facilities to train, and the money. I think there's a, unfortunately, the big argument it just goes down to is money and the resources. If the resources aren't there, then it's just going to be, it's going to be tough for them to thrive on. But I think there needs, I think, as you say, when you've got pulling, when you've got sponsors that come in like McDonald's, which has come in and sort of sponsored the kind of the grassroots area and the grassroots game, I think it's vital to have that. But at the moment, I think there's still a long way to go with that.
I think you're absolutely spot on. David, a quick comment to wrap this bit up.
I think we'll save it for another day. All I was going to say before, you mentioned about Donny Bells. Before COVID, the fact that Lincoln City ladies were doing fairly well, and suddenly overnight the chairman moved to Notts County and said, "Oh, I know, they're now Notts County ladies." And I think within 3 seasons they'd gone. Because I got the impression from the Notts County fans I knew, very few embraced it because they said, now, if it had been a Nottinghamshire ladies team that had come up and we, sort of, I don't know, the Meadows ladies or Nottingham City Centre ladies or something, they'd have embraced it. But the fact effectively, it was a franchise bought in from, and a fairly good Lincoln United, sorry, a Lincoln City ladies team at that as well, were just basically trashed for somebody else's plaything.
Yeah, and I think there was, again, you know, we've seen Notts County come up into the National League, and it's a fairly new team. But Lincoln, I think, you know, they were a different name for a couple of years. I think they were called Nettleham, I think they were at one point. So again, I think there's a bit of a hangover with a lot of the stuff. I think Lincoln United, I think coming up, I think, you know, that's going to be great. I think they've done brilliant. They actually beat Lincoln City the other day in the County Cup. So I think it's great that Lincoln as a whole, they're going to have two really competitive teams next season in the National League, in the Midlands League. So I think there's going to be some exciting games. So I think as a whole for the city, I think the way that I look and go, it's great that we've got two clubs that are able to fight and actually going to give their all next season.
I'm gonna hold the train ride until next week because I'm enjoying listening to Joe and his comments and his thoughts on football. So we'll hold the train ride and give us more time to talk with Joe. So we'll go straight on to question four for Joe, and this is wide open then, Joe. Which non-league clubs impress you the most, David?
Yeah, both on and off the field. I mean, your vlogs, your visits, you do show some of the background scenery to it, and you don't go at great depth about the quality of the pies or whatever, but you do mention that a little bit of the sort of whole day out, as it were.
Yeah, and I think a lot of clubs, I think a lot of non-league clubs have sort of in the past have really impressed me. I think for going on kind of season as a whole, last season, but probably one of the best grounds I went to was Buxton. I think the amount of money, the amount of time and effort that's gone into redoing that ground, I think is absolutely fantastic. I remember the first time I went to it was 2017. They played Gateshead in the FA Cup in a qualifying game. And I had to laugh because if we were going on footballers that we've seen in the past, I remember seeing Ricky Ravenhill and Jan Butts, two ex-Donny players playing for Buxton, and I'm there behind the goal calling them Donny Rejects, which is just funny. But I remember looking at that ground and just thinking it's a nice setup. But at the time, I think they were Northern Prem, so there wasn't that much of a wasn't that much there to be seen. And then I went last season when they played Hyde United in the FA Cup, and I sat and I went through the turnstile to the ground thinking, my God, they've really done this out lovely. The 3G pitch looks superb. And again, you know, we're going back, you know, again, talking about Worksop Town, another club that, as you said, you know, were in dire straits just before COVID, and then kind of COVID kind of gave them a chance to reset a little bit. And what they've done is nothing short of remarkable, though. And you can see, and bit like you two, what when you go to a ground, you like to see where how the club is moving forward and whether things are moving forward off the pitch, the amount of redeveloping that's doing to the ground, just keeping it nice and neat, I think is it's nice because at least then you can say fans that have not been to the ground, you can say, go here, because I think they'll get more fans through the gate. So, you know, that like anything with football, you can go to fantastic places, you can go to apps, some absolute dives of places. I won't name names too much, but I think there's always a unique character when you go to grounds. I think probably one of the best grounds I went to in the Northwest was Witton Albion, just because when I walked in and you've got the museum in there, and I did the video a couple of years ago, probably I think it was my 10 favourite non-league grounds, and I put that in my top 10 because of there's very few grounds in, I'd say, in the English pyramid that's got a museum free of charge that you can go in and have a look at the memorabilia. It's superb. Like I say, there's so many grounds I've still got to do, and people say, go here, go there, and I'm going, yes, but I've got so little time, so you're going to have to bear with me. But I think it's just wonderful to actually, and I say, I like myself, like yourselves as well, you're championing non-league, which is just brilliant to see, and I say clubs are gonna really invest in that. So the more I go to the more grounds I do, I think the more I actually fall in love with non-league.
Quite right, too. Good lad. Because that's where you can. I always think you can influence things at non-league. You're influencing things in what you do in non-league. Whereas if you was doing it for any league club, looking at their sort of top team, you've got no influence. Supporters have got no influence anymore at league clubs. There's some non-league clubs where supporters have got no influence either, but that's another story for another day. Right, projections now. Dave has been looking, and because it's a build-up now, isn't it, till the end of the season when everybody tries to prejudge what the FA are going to do, which is difficult because the FA don't know what they're going to do. So, but it's fun.
We'll start with the Leicestershire senior league side, Alexton and New Parks. They'll achieve a top five finish if they gain one more point. If they've passed the ground grading, does anybody know if they will be the first club to be promoted into the pyramid? Unless, of course, anybody out there knows different. Leeds-based Middleton FC were only formed in 2017 and they already have a West Yorkshire League title to their name. From the start of this season, they have played at the South Leeds Stadium with its 3,450 capacity grandstand. With an 18-point lead, 99 goals scored and only one defeat, pyramid football looks almost a certainty there. Our third side, with one foot in the promised land, are Northern Alliance at Alnwick Town, formed in 1879. These Magpies hope to become England's most northerly pyramid club. Their St James's Park ground has already all the requirements needed, and all that's needed now is a top five finish in their division.
So, Joe, I take it you've probably been to Middleton FC, or more to the point, the South Leeds Stadium?
Actually, I haven't. I know. It's again, you know, a lot of the kind of feeder leagues I've done, I've not really done that kind of ones up by the West Yorkshire way, which is maybe something I need to tap into. The only feeder leagues I've done is Central Midlands, of course. That's a very nice one to tick off. I've done Sheffield Hallamshire one, which again I like to do. I've sort of tapped into a little bit of the Nottinghamshire Senior League, and I mean I've done Keyworth, which was that's a really nice setup there. And like I say, I want to do more. It's normally towards the back end of the season when I actually get the chance to actually do them, because I'm always out and about doing sort of National League stuff, doing Northern Prem. So it's actually when I get the chance to do some like the half six games when we get towards April, May time, it's actually quite a nice reward because you don't get to actually do these grounds early in the season. So I might have to put the South Leeds Stadium on my list, actually, that's for certain.
You have to see a game when you go to these grounds, or does it count if you've just been to the ground? You see, I'm still trying to work out this ground hopping thing. I've not really got to grips with it all yet, because there seems to be lots of different rules and regulations. So if you went to a ground and there was no game being played, but you stood on that ground, have you been to that ground?
Some people say yes, some people say no. I am the impression to go yes, only because one of my rules, one of the things I did was years and years ago, probably talking 7-8 years ago now, I went to Berlin for a week, and I actually went to the Olympic Stadium, and I count it. I count it because it might be one of the lifetime opportunities. I actually go to the Olympic Stadium in Berlin and actually tick it off. And so I just basically ticked that off. And all right, the groundhopping police might come and arrest me for that, but let them come and arrest me, because there's very few times I'm going to actually get to do the Olympic Stadium. But I think it just goes on by what your rules are. Sometimes there's no set rules when it comes to groundhopping, is what I've been told. So, yeah. Feel free if you want to do it.
I went to see my grandson play rugby, and he was playing at Alnwick Rugby Club, and the sat nav took us to Alnwick Town Football Club. So, Mr. Pickerill, can I cross Alnwick Town Football Club off, as I've been to?
It depends on what rules you you set for yourself. I mean, there was one gentleman in COVID actually claimed about 30 grounds in one day, and he said, "How have you done that?" "Oh, well, I drove from Holyhead to Swansea, so I drove past Cardiff City, and I drove past Nuneaton, so I claimed Nuneaton Borough." "Well, did you go past the ground?" "Well, no, I just went past Nuneaton." And you just think, you're probably pushing yourself at that point. But I would say something like visiting the ground as a ground visit is as good as watching a game in some cases, because you're probably never going to go to the Olympic Stadium in Berlin.
I only say that because a couple of seasons ago, when I was helping do the gate at Newark and Shearwood's match at Collingham, Joe, this chap arrived very early on the train, and he'd come from Gloucester. And he waited until the programmes come on sale. And this was probably about an hour before kickoff. And he said, "Oh, right. Thank you very much. I'll get going now. Sorry, you're quite happy to stop and have a drink with us, mate. No problem." "Oh, no, no, I know. I've come, I bought my programme. I've got some photos and I've been on the ground. I'm on my way back to Gloucester now." "Oh, okay. So if he can count that, I can count Annick."
"Yes, yeah. I wouldn't stop you.
So have you been to Alexton or Middleton or Annick, David, or am I the winner?"
"I've been to Annick."
"Oh.
But no, I've got to do Alexton and I've got to do Middleton."
"Never mind. Right, anyone who knows me, you know I never start rattling on, but I never start rattling on about not so like cup final, of course, where Winter Simpson's come back from 3-0 down to beat the mighty, as I thought there was then, Thoresby Colliery 5-3 in extra time. And that, of course, sets us up for what happens next."
"Yeah, Joe, what's your most memorable match that you've seen? And it can be professional or it can be non-league."
"Ooh, that's a good question. I'd probably say, if we're saying probably what I've seen with our YouTube, there's probably two, but I'm going to have to, one would have to be the Liverpool-Barca game, the 4-0 win, any day. I watched that. Funny enough, I was playing darts that night, and I was trying not to, when I'm throwing, trying to have a look at the TV and going without, you know, accidentally hitting someone in the head with the dart, but It was just a glorious night watching that game. It was amazing. In terms of non-league, there's again, I've seen so many great games in 5.5 years of doing YouTube. Like, you really put me on the spot tonight, you two. You really have.
I would have thought Worksop and Emly was that pretty good? Did you say? Oh no, Blyth Spartans.
Oh, the Blythe game. Well, Blythe, I did the Emily Worksop game in the Sheffield game and finished 10-0 to Worksop. The Worksop Blythe game, that was 3-2. That was a cracking game. I'm trying to think now, looking back. The problem is they all just morph into one. That's the way I see it.
I've seen a lot of your vlogs, and I was trying to think, where have you been? And it's probably easier, where haven't you been?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. Going back to last season, I probably say, well, Hell's Own probably was one, just because It was such a great day out. Stockport Fylde was a great game, controversial, massive controversial game, but it was such a good game. Probably one of the best games I did was during the first year of the channel, was when Altrincham played Chorley in the when they're both in the National League North, and Altrincham won 5-3, and I remember Jordan Hume is now at Radcliffe. He scored, and then Chorley went 2-1 up, and then Altrincham brought it back to 2-2. Chorley went 3-2 up, then Altrincham equalised. Then Altrincham scored a free kick to make it 4-3, literally 60 seconds, and then scored a penalty to win 5-3. It was just, oh, it was such a great day out. I remember doing the outro on the tram going back home, and I couldn't speak because my voice was absolutely destroyed. But those type of games, it was just frantic, attack after attack after attack. It was just a marvelous game of football. I'd probably say that's probably my number one. Or no, I've just remembered the game. Yeah, a couple of years ago, Fylde played Boston. It was a semi-final of the National League North in the playoffs, and Boston were there was about 600 fans that went 600 Boston United fans that went to Fylde that day, and Danny Elliott scored the winning penalty. He scored twice, and the away end was just absolute carnage. It was just such a good day out. I got to the Boston didn't go up. Because again, they're a bit like, a team that I when I grew up watching. So I remember watching Soccer AM back in the day and seeing the likes of Boston, Rushden and Diamonds, and Kidderminster, and that, one of the Football League teams. And I'd like to see someone like Boston get back to the Football League one day, a bit like Scarborough, really. Just a really, really nice club that has got really, really good fans. And I say, I think the fans deserve maybe a trip back to the National League or the Football League one day.
2 months left. Is anything decided yet?
Our first look takes in the state of play in four of the Step 5 divisions. For most of the season, Congleton Town have looked to have the Midland League title sewn up, but a run of three draws in their last four outings has let in Lichfield City. 5 points adrift with two matches in hand, and the two sides go head to head on Saturday. At the bottom, it looks like Bewdley Town will be going straight back to Step 6. They're currently 10 points off safety. It's all over bar the shouting in the Eastern Counties, with Mildenhall holding a 12-point advantage over the chasing pack. And with Norwich United packing in mid-season, relegation has also been decided. Assuming the Vars does not become the main attraction, promotion for Emley should be in the bag. 6 points clear of Campion with two matches in hand, while at the bottom, either Maltby Main or Goole look in line for the dreaded drop. And finally, the United Counties League South, with 5 points separating the top four, it's still all to play for. Wellingborough lead the way from Racing Club Warwick, Elston Park, and St Neots. It's equally as tight at the bottom, with Leicester Nirvana, Desborough, and Ainsbury all separated by a single point.
Suppose you could say Mildenhall are flying.
Very good.
Right, it's news time. Starting totally locally.
Lewis Rose has left Anstey Nomads for local rivals and the side 9 points above them in the table. That's Harborough Town. The locals were far from happy about it, and they're claiming it's money talks. Why do they think he went to Anstey in the first place?
It's money talks. It's
Yeah.
simple as that. You just have to accept it.
Elliot King has returned to Harrowby after a spell at Newark Town, and he scored on his second debut. Following last weekend's defeat at Newark and Sherwood United, the Deeping Rangers manager has resigned. His club are seventh in the table. And I didn't think they played that badly at all last week. I thought they played sportingly in a decent game.
Yeah, you even clapped them when they went off, didn't you?
I do, but then you don't like me giving up opposing fans
Can't be
applause if
doing
they've played well.
with that. Can't be doing that at all. Right, around the country.
We told you a couple of weeks ago about North East club Ashington's problems as they battle to attain their Step 4 ground grading. It was good to hear that Northumberland County Council have donated £2,000 towards essential pitch works.
Yes, it was. And one that didn't make the script, but it's only broken the second half this week, is we told you a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, that Truro City are now ground shearing at Taunton Town.
Yeah, about 134 miles each way.
Yeah, I mean, Taunton Town, these ground is notorious for being as big a bog as the one at Plymouth Parkway. Anyway, this weekend, it's Truro's turn to host Taunton.
At Taunton.
But at Taunton. But there's no guarantee that the pitch is going to be anywhere close to being playable because it's raining down there like it always seems to do at the moment. So what Truro have done is booked another ground for the game to be played on. So Truro's home game against Taunton will now be played at Gloucester City's ground. You said last time we spoke, you wondered if it was the furthest that any team has played from home when they've been ground shearing. Well, Gloucester City, they may as well be at the YMCA at Newark, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, if you're one of those Truro fans that for about a season and a half travelled to every home game at Torquay, which was a 200-mile round trip, and I think they said in the game when it was Torquay and Truro, I think it was 54 and 94, wasn't it? I think the two attendances there. Are you really wanting to go another 40 miles beyond your existing ground in Taunton? I can't see it happening. I couldn't afford it every week.
I can't. And that, Joe, it is out of the Football League, out of professional football, if you like, but still not a care in the world, not a jot of support for the supporters.
Of course, no. And unfortunately, I mean, I've been reading the story as it's been moving early in the day today, and it's been like, I can't get my head around it. The fact that Truro City are having to play in Gloucestershire, it's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I know that there is talks in the pipeline that they are going to be ground sharing with the Cornish Pirates at some point. I think it's next season or season after, with a new ground, but the fact that they've gone to this length of it just boggles my mind. It just, yeah, I'm and, you massively know, flabbergasted.
If you lived in Truro, you've got a step foreside 30 miles to the west. You've got two step five sides that are arguably will be step four sides next season. Unless you are an absolute diehard, you ain't going to be travelling to watch Truro, are you?
No.
You really are. It's beyond crazy. Right, talking of beyond crazy, below the pyramid.
Sudbury FC of the Uttoxeter and District Sunday League may be forced to leave their picturesque home opposite Sudbury Hall as the National Trust want to convert it into a grass meadow. The club have started a petition and that has already gathered over 45,000 signatures.
And that gave me the idea for this favourite football photo, because somebody took a photo of Sudbury playing on the pitch in front of Sudbury Hall. And it's beautiful surroundings, but it's owned by the National Trust. And of course, the National Trust wants to take everything back to as it was. I would like to think that the Trust could find somewhere on that estate for a football pitch to go.
I can't see why they couldn't.
Probably rather than actually in front of it. I'd like to think that they could do that, but...
Because if I'm right, I think North Lee in Oxfordshire, actually, their ground's just inside the gates of a stately home or something like that, I think, just off the area. So why couldn't they? It'd be a feature, surely.
You would have thought so. Right. We always look at the teams that's having a bad season, a season that they will remember for all the wrong reasons, and... Well, we're going back to an old favourite and a team that I think David will probably know a bit about. So two teams for you tonight.
It's not getting any better for our old friends Sturminster Marshall. It's now 228 goals conceded from their 22 defeats, with remarkably only three scored in their 10 home matches. Fleet Spurs finished bottom of the Wessex Step 6 division last season with only three victories and 132 goals conceded. This time round in the Hampshire Premier, they are bottom again with one victory and 95 goals conceded. Established in 1948, their claim to fame is that they had to change their badge as Tottenham took offence to the cockerel. Apparently, it infringed copyright. I had heard that elsewhere. And I've been to Fleet. I've been to Fleet Spurs.
No, I thought you. I thought so.
In the Wessex League days and in the Hampshire League games as well.
I thought so. And that, folks, is it for another week. But what I find absolutely remarkable, David, in the last 3 weeks, you've found us three guests, three youngsters, all passionate about football, all passionate about football at grassroots level. And there's times that we all sort of stand there and moan and groan that we're all getting past it, and when we die, football at grassroots will go with it and all things like that. But there are kids out there that are passionate, and what you've actually found is the next generation, haven't you?
Oh, I think so, without a doubt. The, as you say, the enthusiasm and the passion for stuff that people like yourself doing, Luke last week and Tom the week before, it's amazing, because we keep saying, give it another couple of years, you know, and bits start dropping off us and we're not well enough to go and we don't want to go anymore. Who is going to step in? Because a lot of the clubs, you know, a lot of the committees and people watching are of a certain age. It's been an absolute pleasure, Joe, speaking to you this week. Thank you so much for stepping in. Enjoy watching your vlogs. And no, it's been great. And you've given us a really good insight. I could talk all night about various aspects of the game, particularly the ladies' game, because that's another can of worms, really, isn't it, at the moment?
It is. And like I say, you know, I'm learning about it every single day, about, you know, how things are. And like I say, you know, I'm learning a lot about football, really enjoy it. You know, it's a real passion of mine. And, you know, thank you for having me on. And like I say, hope we can do a follow-up episode in the near future.
I rather get the impression it won't be too long before Joe Skelton is back, because there's so much more to talk about. But as ever, time beats us. Next week, Mr. Pickerill.
Right, we've got Max Oldham, and he's aware of this description. I didn't write it, but he agrees with it. He's currently plying his trade as a moody winger in the Isthmian League when the bookings haven't totted up. He's also an inspiration behind the organisation Half Term, who champion well-being for non-league footballers, and he's going to be talking to us about life in the Isthmian League, which is a league I've not seen for about 20 years, and the general, again, welfare and the more serious side of football.
Excellent. I will look forward to that.
Assuming he's not banned, if he picks up all these bookings, maybe he's not allowed to appear. I don't know.
So, Mr. Pickerill, I've got no doubt he's going to Eastwood to watch Belper.
I'm going to watch Newark and Sheffield United play Belper at Eastwood, yeah, but you're right.
Right, and Joe, where are you off to?
I'll be at Buxton against Scarborough on Saturday.
Buxton against Scarborough. That's a trip out for Scarborough.
I wonder if Des Trapps will be there, as he's a closet Scarborough man, isn't he?
I wonder if it'd be snowing, because apparently they're going to have snow in the Peak District, so you may need your snow boots, my friend. Right, and on that note, it's time to say good night.
Good night. Joe waved.
And Joe waves. Great for radio. You see, he's a good radio commentator. He waves. Catch you later, all of you. Bye-bye.